This is the Cambridge English Advanced Listening Test. Test 8. I'm going to give you the instructions for this test. I'll introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you'll hear this sound. You'll hear each piece twice. Remember, while you're listening, write your answers on the question paper. You'll have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. There'll now be a pause. Please ask any questions now because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You'll hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B, or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are 2 questions for each extract. Extract 1. You hear part of a radio interview with a product designer called Charles Loughlin. Now look at questions 1 and 2.
Charles, you're retired now, but you actually designed some 600 household products, and all of them as an employee of a company. Did it ever frustrate you that you were making products without your name on?
It was standard practice. Besides, I needed a weekly paycheck before I needed recognition. Nowadays, you can find designers' names on products, but it tends to be high-profile people seeking attention. And then there's celebrity endorsement and all that. People think that if they buy a soccer ball that has the name of some famous player on it, they're going to score wonderful goals. A ploy to get you to buy products.
What advice do you have for young designers?
What they do will affect so many people during the lifetime of that product. That's serious stuff. So the product should do what it's supposed to do and be pleasing to have in your environment. I try to make things appear as if they just belong. They don't need to scream. I don't think a nutcracker needs to look like an elephant.
Charles, you're retired now, but you actually designed some 600 household products, and all of them as an employee of a company. Did it ever frustrate you that you were making products without your name on?
It was standard practice. Besides, I needed a weekly paycheck before I needed recognition. Nowadays, you can find designers' names on products, but it tends to be high-profile people seeking attention. And then there's celebrity endorsement and all that. People think that if they buy a soccer ball that has the name of some famous player on it, they're going to score wonderful goals. A ploy to get you to buy products.
What advice do you have for young designers?
What they do will affect so many people during the lifetime of that product. That's serious stuff. So the product should do what it's supposed to do and be pleasing to have in your environment. I try to make things appear as if they just belong. They don't need to scream. I don't think a nutcracker needs to look like an elephant.
Extract 2. You hear 2 friends discussing a TV interview with an actress called Celia Dent. Now look at questions 3 and 4.
Well, what a one-sided interview that was, and with one of my favourite actresses. She hardly got a look in. No one would have learned anything new about her, especially as it was the usual tired stuff being put to her. When she did try to steer things in a different direction, the interviewer just ignored her and kept going on about himself.
There aren't many really good interviewers, are there? The best ones really take on board what's being said and follow it up. This guy showed no imagination at all, just covering old ground and targeting obvious stuff. No wonder he couldn't get interesting responses.
And Celia could have told a few stories. She's had a fascinating life. I know some film actors are perhaps a bit tricky. Some seem afraid to be themselves, like they're desperate to keep up their public image at all costs. And of course, many actors are interviewed just after their last film's been released and are understandably keen to publicise it. But interviewers often concentrate on other superficial stuff. I love it when actors are challenged a bit and the interviewer dares to deviate from the set script, putting them on the spot. Well, what a one-sided interview that was, and with one of my favourite actresses. She hardly got a look in. No one would have learned anything new about her, especially as it was the usual tired stuff being put to her. When she did try to steer things in a different direction, the interviewer just ignored her and kept going on about himself.
There aren't many really good interviewers, are there? The best ones really take on board what's being said and follow it up. This guy showed no imagination at all, just covering old ground and targeting obvious stuff. No wonder he couldn't get interesting responses.
And Celia could have told a few stories. She's had a fascinating life. I know some film actors are perhaps a bit tricky. Some seem afraid to be themselves, like they're desperate to keep up their public image at all costs. And of course, many actors are interviewed just after their last film's been released and are understandably keen to publicise it. But interviewers often concentrate on other superficial stuff. I love it when actors are challenged a bit and the interviewer dares to deviate from the set script, putting them on the spot.
Extract 3. You hear two freelance journalists talking about their work. Now look at questions 5 and 6.
I must get down to some work.
Is getting started tricky for you?
Well, it can take me a while to enter into a creative state, but once I'm there, I lose awareness of absolutely anything but the ideas flowing. Don't even perceive my fingers typing.
Really?
And I'm then extremely resistant to interruption, so I'll shout at anyone who knocks at my study door. My defensive reactions are subconscious, though, and usually I don't even recall them. The family's used to it, and I'm certainly not upholding it as a model of good behavior, but sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah, once I'm immersed in creating something, I usually maintain that state until I complete the work. And I don't even feel as if I'm working. But if I look at the task ahead of me, all I tend to see is the effort involved.
Right. And what about stuff you wrote ages back? Do you return to it for inspiration?
Well, I find I can't always recreate the mindset I had during its creation, because inevitably I've since broadened my perspective on it. I can see why I use the inspiration I did, but obviously experience changes you.
Yes, absolutely. I must get down to some work.
Is getting started tricky for you?
Well, it can take me a while to enter into a creative state, but once I'm there, I lose awareness of absolutely anything but the ideas flowing. Don't even perceive my fingers typing.
Really?
And I'm then extremely resistant to interruption, so I'll shout at anyone who knocks at my study door. My defensive reactions are subconscious, though, and usually I don't even recall them. The family's used to it, and I'm certainly not upholding it as a model of good behavior, but sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah, once I'm immersed in creating something, I usually maintain that state until I complete the work. And I don't even feel as if I'm working. But if I look at the task ahead of me, all I tend to see is the effort involved.
Right. And what about stuff you wrote ages back? Do you return to it for inspiration?
Well, I find I can't always recreate the mindset I had during its creation, because inevitably I've since broadened my perspective on it. I can see why I used the inspiration I did, but obviously experience changes you.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the end of part one.